Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. Two for one, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. I have some show notes for you if you're looking for some wrestling tonight. WCWO at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana, as usual. Supreme Wrestling happening tonight featuring legendary Larry D of Impact Wrestling. That's in Madison, Indiana. Tomorrow night, Supreme will be back there in Madison. Innovate Wrestling in Kingsport, Tennessee. You can find myself at Northwest Pro happening at Curly's in Hauser, Idaho. SCW in Mountain Pine, Arkansas. EC Wrestling in Ashland, Kentucky, and NCW in Follinsby, West Virginia tomorrow. So there's some wrestling out there. Go find it and support the local independents. Like I said, you can find myself there in Idaho with Northwest Pro. I believe our own Randy Zellers will also be in attendance. But I believe one of our guests has arrived, so let's bring him on right away. Do we have John Cosper with us?
I'm right here.
All right. Well, John Cosper, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here today. You are here primarily because you are the author of several books on pro wrestling, but one that is about to be released, that being the autobiography of Turnbuckle Turmoil's own Hall of Fame member, Princess Victoria. What can you tell us about this brand new book you have coming?
Well, the book, we actually just went ahead and released it on Amazon yesterday, if anybody wants to pick it up off of there. This is the story of one of the great ladies of the wrestling ring. She only had a career that lasted about 4 years because of, unfortunately, a fluke injury that occurred in the ring. But Princess Victoria has wanted to tell her story for 22 years. It's actually 1999 when she started trying to write the story herself, but she's just got an incredible story to tell, not just about wrestling, but about her life before wrestling and even after wrestling. Long before she ever set foot in the ring, long before she even knew what pro wrestling was, this woman was a survivor. And I will tell you that this is not the easiest book you'll ever read, because the story about her childhood and some of the things she went through is pretty startling at times, but you know, she's very frank about it. She's very honest about it. And it's a story that she really wanted to tell because, you know, as she said over and over, it's like, if I help one person to realize that you're not alone and it does get better and you can move past, you know, these horrible things that have happened to you, then that was her reason for starting to write in the first place. But, you know, this is a book for wrestling fans, certainly, but it's also a book for, you know, anyone who's ever been through a hardship, anybody who's ever suffered through, you know, a really rough childhood, people who've been through abuse. This is a story that I think is going to touch a whole lot of people, not just wrestling fans.
We've had Princess Victoria on our show. Obviously, she's a Hall of Famer for us, but we've had her on multiple times. She has painted a picture of some of what you've talked about in our interviews with her. I know she had a very difficult start in pro wrestling. It was kind of a hardship for her to get in. She didn't have the easiest time in the business and then had to leave wrestling due to an injury she suffered. So it wasn't on her own accord that she had to leave the business. We all knew that, but over time, she has places, both podcasts and television, where she did paint kind of a picture of a really rough upbringing and a lot more struggles than we really knew of when she was active in wrestling. How shocking was it for you as you're working with her to create the book, learning a lot of the details that she's put into this?
Like I said, she doesn't hold anything back. She's very honest. She's very frank about the kind of abuse she suffered at the hands of her stepfather, and not just herself, but also her brothers and some other, you know, children that were part of the family. It's shocking. I mean, it's really horrifying to read something like this. And, you know, we don't often think about it. You know, I certainly grew up in a good family with a mom and a dad who were very loving and caring and was very fortunate in that. But a lot of people don't have that, you know, and it's kind of a startling thing to read about and then to realize, you know, that this is, for a lot of people, this was the norm with what they grew up with and this is what they knew. And, you know, it's something that we're not going to be able to move past it unless we can discuss it in the open, because, you know, a lot of people who grew up like Vicky did, they think, well, this is how it is for everybody. And it's, you know, when you have someone like Vicky who's willing to speak out and share her story, then, you know, people like that can realize, no, this is not normal. This is not healthy. You know, this is criminal behavior, you know, and it's, you know, it's okay to speak out. It's okay to seek help. You know, and you know, there's a way out of that situation. And it's not just important for people that are growing up in those situations, but it's important for other people to have their eyes and ears open and be willing to look for the signs. And, you know, if you see or hear somebody who's going through something like what she went through, you know, to be able to speak out and be able to step in and help somebody out who's in need.
Now, Princess Victoria was up here in our area, the Pacific Northwest, for a good portion of her career. For the country at large, the Pacific Northwest was kind of isolated away from the rest of the wrestling world. Unless you lived here, you didn't hear about it too much. The magazines covered it very, very little. There wasn't a television presence showing you what was happening in Portland if you lived elsewhere. But there was a real hotbed of pro wrestling, and over the years, some other wrestlers that have written books have chronicled a lot that we didn't know about the wrestling scene in the Pacific Northwest. People like Roddy Piper and the Grappler, and very recently Lance Von Erich, all detailed quite a bit in the Pacific Northwest scene. Do you think that the fans that are interested in the Pacific Northwest and learning more about this particular territory are going to really enjoy this book? Because I know Princess Victoria is very, very fond of her days working for Don Owen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and she's got some stories about Don. She's got a lot of stories about Sandy Barr and the way he kind of tricked her actually into training. She says she was tricked into it. Sandy told her he had another girl he wanted her to work with just to be a body in the ring. And then all of a sudden, after 3 weeks, it was just Vicky in the ring. But, you know, the wrestling of Bug and Bomb. I mean, Sandy Barr had a fantastic crew in those days. And Vicky raves on and on about, you know, not only the way those guys worked in the ring, but the way they treated her and the way they treated Velvet McIntyre. You know, she trained with Terry Allen, you know, when he first came into the territory, and helped Sandy Barr lie to Don Owen and tell him, yeah, he's been training with us for forever, when it was really just his first time being in the ring. And she has stories about training with Velvet. She has some great stories about, you know, the kind of person Sandy Barr was, and not only, you know, how he trained her and never took a dime for, you know, for the training that he gave her, but the way he looked out for her. You know, she had kind of been on her own since she was 14, and, you know, she was a teenager and working different jobs as a waitress, you know, in the Portland area and kind of getting her freedom and, you know, learning that there was life beyond the childhood that she had had. And, you know, she could have, and she'll honestly tell you, it's like, I could have gone hog wild. I could have ended up, you know, goodness knows what could have happened to me. But, you know, Sandy Barr was always watching out for her and taking care of her. You know, and she's got some great stories about the crew that she worked with. She has some fantastic Roddy Piper stories, which for me is always a draw. A really great story, too, about how Buddy Rose was the guy who really put her on the map. And actually, all the guys came together, you know, because she was put into an eight-person battle royal one night. Don Owen's original concept was for her to be the first person tossed out. And all seven of those guys got together and said, nope, Vicky's going to be the last one eliminated. You know, and we're going to put her over tonight. So, yeah, if you're a Pacific Northwest fan, you're certainly going to enjoy the book.
There are still a lot of people that were trained by Sandy Barr that are active in pro wrestling at the independent level in Portland. I know Princess Victoria herself has made a few appearances over the last few years at some of the independent shows to visit, and occasionally will go out in front of the fans as well. Is taking the book kind of on the road, if you will, something that you can see happening for the book? Do you think Princess Victoria will make a loop of the local scene and sell the books at merchandise tables here in the Northwest?
I think she'd certainly like to. She's not one of those veterans that you know, says it was better in my day and what's going on out there is garbage. She's, you know, invested a lot of time in working with a lot of the young kids and partnered up with some of Sandy's students to help kind of train the next generation and to do it right, to do it old school. And I know she's definitely wanting to get back out there and see the fans. You know, her health, you know, has been kind of rough over the last several years, but she's feeling better than she has in quite a while. And I don't know if she has any set plans at the moment, but I do know that's something she's wanting to get out and, you know, to see the fans and also to, you know, to get the book out there that way as well.
Now, in addition to Princess Victoria's book, like we've been discussing, you've written several other books about various pro wrestlers, helping them out with their autobiographies. I know that those books have been well received so far. What was it that caused you to write Princess Victoria's autobiography? What was the connection there?
Scott Teal actually put us in touch. Scott Teal with Crowbar Press, if your listeners don't know, he's one of the great, I mean, really the great encyclopedist of pro wrestling. I don't know how many books he has to his credit at this point. But I mean, he's done biographies, autobiographies. He's done record books of a number of different towns. He's worked with a lot of other historians. He put out a book about the Riki Dozan days in Japan with Koji Miyamoto. He worked on a book about Madison Square Garden with J. Michael Kenyon. Jason Presley's done a lot of great work on the early days in Alabama, and I know Scott's published a lot of Jason's stuff as well. But Vicki had reached out to Scott initially, and Scott had told her, you know, I would love to help you, but I'm 2 years out, and she had asked for a couple recommendations, and I was one of the names that Scott had given her. So Vicki messaged me on Facebook, and I was in the middle of wrapping up Chris Candido's biography this past fall when I heard from her. And we had a conversation by phone. She kind of told me what she had done so far and everything, and sent me all the stuff that she had worked on over the years and put together. And I was, you know, after reading it and after talking to her, I was like, yeah, I would absolutely love to help you out. And she really had a great start to it. Yeah, you know, it doesn't typically go where, you know, I'll release one book in January and have another one released, you know, in March like I did this year. But Vicki had really done a lot of work in advance, and it was really just kind of pulling things together and getting some additional stories and kind of making a cohesive package for her. So, I was absolutely thrilled to be able to work with her.
One of your other books is one that I definitely have in my collection, and that is Tracy Smothers' autobiography. If everybody doesn't buy this book, then everybody dies. Tracy, of course, shortly after the book came out, passed away. I know that Tracy put a lot of time and effort into getting that book. He wanted to get it out to the people, which he did. What was it like working on a book with Tracy Smothers, who has millions and millions of stories throughout his career?
That was an absolute treat to be able to work with Tracy. You know, and it was the whole time we were working, unfortunately, we ran into the specter of him. He had been diagnosed with stomach cancer. This would have been the fall of 2019. And we had actually been talking for about a year at that point. And when he had first reached out to me, I had a couple of the projects ahead of it. And the spring of 2019, I had started kind of doing the preliminary work on the book and gathering the stories that were already out there. And by fall, when we were ready to start doing the interviews and everything, it was actually right around the same time he was starting his chemotherapy. I tell you, Tracy's, you know, absolutely probably one of the biggest hearts that's ever been in the pro wrestling business. Not only his love for wrestling, but his love for pouring into, you know, other wrestlers and teaching and training them. You know, Tracy has so many guys and ladies out there that still refer to him as Pops. He is their wrestling father. He was their mentor and just cared about them and nurtured them. And, somebody else like Vicky, who, you know, saw value in you know, pouring himself into the next generation. But working with Tracy was a delight. I mean, every week, you know, we'd spend, you know, two nights a week on the phone for an hour, hour and a half, kind of depending on how he felt. And, you know, when he was in the hospital and he had the chemo treatments going on, you know, there would be, they gave him some sort of medication that hyped him up. And some nights he would just go and go and go. We'd go for an hour and a half, 2 hours some nights. And, you know, there'd be nights when he was home recovering and he couldn't talk for more than 10 minutes because he was so completely wiped out. But, I mean, yeah, like you said, he's got a million stories, just a million great memories, and it was a ton of fun to work with him on it. Just one of the best guys, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and it still, you know, losing him was awful. I miss that guy every day. You know, he was constantly texting me. If we were talking wrestling, we were talking football, we were talking whatever. He was a true friend. He was a great guy. And I know I'm not alone in saying this, but I still absolutely miss that guy.
Same here for sure. I definitely miss Tracy, and I'm glad the book was able to come out and he was able to see it reach the fans before he passed away. So I'm very thankful for that. Obviously not looking for specifics or anything, but has that book been doing fairly well?
It's done very well, and Tracy was there to see the success of it and see the reception that it got, you know. And it's we got the book out. I believe it was March when we finally got it released, and then it was October when he passed. So he was able to see the, you know, the response to it and people's reactions to it, which was great. It's a shame COVID happened because he was actually going to be at Cauliflower Alley last spring, and they were going to have him, you know, do a seminar and do a Q&A and everything. And just for him to get that due and to get that recognition from his peers would have been so nice. He wasn't, you know, in line for any of the awards or anything like that, but would have been fantastic for him to get to do that. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot of fans, you know, I'm sure out there, you know, because they didn't pay attention to the regional promotions or they don't go as far back in the memory, they may not know who he is. But again, this is a guy, I mean, you cannot underestimate, you know, the impact he has had on this business. And the number of guys, you know, still working for WWF, for AEW, for Impact and Independence, you know, who, you know, he touched and he inspired and he took them under his wing. And, yeah, the impact he's had on this business is just very far reaching and will, you know, it's going to be felt for a long, long time.
Definitely glad to hear that for sure. Now you run a website, it's eatsleepwrestle.com, and on the website I noticed you promoting a show that is near and dear to us. We helped promote the show last year with the actual promoter of the event, that being Paulcade 2. We will actually have Chad French back on our show leading up to Paulcade 2, just like we did for the original Paulcade. What can you tell us about what Paulcade means to you and why you've promoted it on your website?
Well, Chad French is a guy I've known for a couple of years. He's done a great job of promoting the independent wrestling scene here in the Midwest. He's a guy who's doing something that I don't have the guts to do or the desire to do, and that's promote a wrestling show. You know, I think the blog post you're referring to, first line I put out was Chad French is an idiot. Because there's just so much involved in promotion that's just, you know, it's like the old Jim Cornette line. How do you make $1 million in pro wrestling? As a promoter, you start off with $10 million. But now Chad put together a pro, you know, he had a, you know, vision for doing something to help the Salem, Indiana animal shelter. And he put together Paulcade last year, which he was able to put off in spite of losing his original building through some sort of shenanigans that I don't, you know, independent territory shenanigans. But he found another building, and in spite of COVID, he was able to get the show off. And I know they had a pretty successful fundraiser last year. You know, he's struggling to kind of get the word out and get people to buy tickets this year. But look, he's got a great show put together. You know, if you like independent wrestling and if you want to see some of the stars of tomorrow, I guarantee you there's at least one star on that show who you're going to see on television in the next probably 2 or 3 years once she turns 18. And that's Billy Stark. So, you know, this is a great chance to come out and see some pro wrestling and to do some good because, I mean, every dime that they make is going to support the animal shelter. You know, it's going for a great cause. It's going to help animals. And, you know, there's not a better guy out there you can support, too, with this in Chad French. And, you know, like I said, I think the world of the guy as a writer and as, you know, as a promoter of wrestling and as an announcer. He's really done a lot of good for independent wrestling and for a lot of the wrestlers. And I know that's part of the reason why a lot of the wrestlers sign on for these shows, in addition to wanting to help the animals themselves, is just how much he's done for them. So, yeah, Pawcade is going to be an outstanding show. I don't have the dates in front of me or anything like that. It's sometime in April. But if you look at Pawcade 2 on Facebook, you can get all the information on it. You can order tickets and find other ways you can help support the animal shelter.
Date for that is April 17th. So people are aware and they can make sure they have plans to be there. It's going to be a fantastic date. And Chad French will be here the 9th of April. So you'll hear more about that show from us. But just kind of sticking with Pawcade just for a second, shows like that are getting noticed not only from the fans that are going to be there in person supporting the animals, but it was a big deal on IWTV, which is a streaming service for independent wrestling. Independents have really relied on streaming services in the last year because of the pandemic and not having the ability to have full capacity shows where fans can go. Here in the Northwest, we still can't have live wrestling in front of paying fans yet. So it's been a blessing for the industry to have a streaming service like that. When shows like that are going to get eyes on them like that, in the back of your mind, is there material there for books in the future? Are you looking for people that are maybe on shows like that might be seen by a large number of people and you're thinking it might be a perfect time to start writing their story?
I'll be honest with you. My projects are kind of mapped out for the next year and a half, but, you know, Chad's actually talked about doing something about the independent scene, like what I did a couple years ago with Eat, Sleep, Wrestle, which was my second book. I'll say that there are some folks, not only main wrestlers, but independent wrestlers that I would jump at the chance to work with them on stories. You know, it's there's the old adage, if you walked in a bar and you saw Jeff Bridges sitting at one end and Bo Bridges at the other, who are you going to go sit by and talk to? You know, and you know, the logic behind that is, you know, everybody goes up to Jeff Bridges. Everybody wants to say hi because they recognize him and he's the big star. You know, he's used to smiling and shaking hands and taking pictures and moving on, you know, but Bo may not get recognized as much, even though he's a phenomenal talent, and he might be the one to sit and tell you more stories. And, you know, excuse me, that's where a guy like a Tracy Smothers or Madman Pondo or, you know, somebody like that is going to have a world more stories to tell you because, you know, they weren't the headliner and they weren't the big time. They weren't the one answering a million questions and has already done a million interviews. But they were there. They got the stories. They got the dirt, and they're not afraid to spread it. So, you know, there are some certain folks that I would love to work with, and, you know, I'm always kind of keeping my eyes out, and I've got my dream list of folks written down as well. So you certainly never know, you know. And like I said, I definitely see a future television talent in Billy Starks, and I think there's quite a few of them in independent wrestling who – you know, if they don't get their due, they should get their due, you know, and two of the ones that I always harp on, I'm like, somebody needs to sign them and give them their, you know, give them their opportunity to shine before it's too late is Lufisto and Aaron Williams. I don't think there's any woman who's had the impact on pro wrestling the last 20 years that Lufisto has, I mean, has never worked for a major company. And there's a lot of folks here in the Midwest, myself included, who say Aaron Williams is the best unsigned talent that's out there. You know, I mean, they just never put on a bad match and they're always worth seeing. So, you know, I mean, it's a lot of fun watching the independent scene. And the last couple of years I've got, you know, when I wrote Eat, Sleep, Wrestle, you know, one of the girls I put on the cover is Crazy Mary Dobson, who became Sarah Logan in WWE, you know, and it was fantastic to watch her go through all that. You know, and I've watched a lot of other talents kind of come through and move to the majors and everything. So, yeah, I mean, certainly the possibilities are always there. I'm always looking, you know, looking ahead and wondering who am I going to write about someday. And the thing that draws me the most in, though, is the great storytellers, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I actually pursued Madman Pondo and wanted to write his book. And his has done so well, we're getting ready to work on a second. And it's because he's a great storyteller. He's got a lot of great stories to share. So I guess in a roundabout way, you know, am I looking for somebody? I've always got my eyes open and I'm always eager to see, you know, who's got the potential, who's going to go on to the next level. And, you know, I always get excited when, you know, when I see somebody show up on TV, whether it's with Ohio Valley Wrestling or Impact or wherever it might be.
I am hoping you get a second Pondo book. And, you know, I've watched Pondo since, he was not very well known at that point. He hadn't quite burst onto the scene yet, but he had some wars for Dan Garza's PWI in Indianapolis for sure. So I am positive Pondo's got at least another book in, and maybe a couple.
We're talking at least a couple, and I'll tell you, if you're watching IWTV and some of the other streaming services, you're going to see a lot of him coming up. He's got three shows coming up. WrestleMania weekend is part of the collective, and I think he's doing more death matches now than he has in quite a few years. He's in demand just about every weekend. He's out on the road. He's still selling the first book. Anytime he takes them out, whether it takes one or two or a dozen, he sells out of them. I put him in the same category with Tracy. He's just a guy who's got a ton of heart. He's poured a lot into a lot of wrestlers, and particularly with the Girl Fight promotion that he's run the last several years. You know, I mean, look at all the names that have come through Girl Fight, you know, working one show or a dozen shows or whatever that are on TV now, you know, and I look at the roster he's got now and some of the girls I've seen come through and I'm like, we're going to see some of these girls on TV before too long. And, yeah, like I said, he's just an incredible storyteller and a great guy. And if you don't know who Madman Pondo is, go Google him, go watch him on YouTube, and keep your eyes open because, you know, his bookings are up this year, and I'm really excited to see that for him.
I most certainly am as well, and I take a little bit of pride in Pondo once seeing me in a dressing room and asking me not to do anything that would scare him. Might have been the most surprising moment in my career, personally. Now, you and Victoria, when you were writing her book, I'm sure covered a lot of places like Japan and Canada where she was active for quite a bit in her career. When you're writing these books as autobiographies for the people that were there, is it important to you as the writer to have a familiarity with the cultures or the kind of distinctiveness of the wrestling scenes in these other countries? Or do you rely on the people whose story it actually is to kind of relay to you kind of the differences in what they were doing in one country to the next?
I'm mainly led by the folks that I'm working with kind of guide the stories as to what they want to tell and how they want to tell it. But I do a little bit of background work. And if there's a name that I don't know or, you know, a territory that I don't know much about, I'll certainly do some studying up on it. Just to add some extra color to the story that Vicky's telling or Tracy or whomever it might be, just to give a little bit more of a well-rounded picture of what was going on.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I'm sure he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, John.
Hello.
John, our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans want to know how you got into the business of book writing. Did you major in English or journalism in college?
I did not. My bachelor's degree is in general studies, which means I know a little bit about a lot, but not much. Now, I didn't take a lot of writing classes in college because at the time I was I was writing a lot of drama. I'd actually gotten involved with the drama ministry at my church and had begun writing skits and plays for other churches as well. So I was really focused at that time on writing for theater. And, I took some playwriting courses, some creative writing classes, some nonfiction writing courses as well. But, it wasn't a major of mine, but, it was something that I was pursuing professionally as kind of a side hustle even back then. Doing the drama thing, which I did that for 24 years, well into my years as a wrestling writer. And over the years, I tried my hands at film writing and had a feature film produced and also some short films and had written some fiction books. And in fact, I've got a fiction website, johncosper.com, where I've got a lot of sci-fi and some other kind of random things that I put together over the years. But it's just always been in my blood. It's just always something that I've loved to do, back in 2012, I was looking for a new challenge and something different to do. And I've been a wrestling fan for a long time, and I'd never done anything nonfiction, nothing historical or anything like that, even though I'm a big history buff as well. And having read a lot of wrestling books and I knew of Mark James and all the great work he had done on Memphis, but I knew he'd never done a book specifically on Louisville. And, I started looking into kind of the history of Louisville, and I mean, well, between Memphis and OVW, there's certainly enough information there for a book, but I had no idea how far back it went. And with my first book, Bluegrass Brawlers, I went all the way back to 1880, telling the story of pro wrestling in the city of Louisville, and that's kind of how I got into it. I guess I was, messing around online and reading different stories and things like that, and then one day at lunch, I said to my wife, I'm thinking about writing a book about the history of wrestling in Louisville. And she said, go for it. And she's regretted it ever since. But, it's certainly been an amazing ride and just the opportunities that have come just from that one conversation and just taking a chance.
Something tells me you didn't grow up in the Northwest. Am I correct?
I didn't grow up where?
Something tells me you didn't grow up in the Northwest.
I did not grow up in the Northwest. No, I was born in Miami, lived in Miami, South Carolina, Miami again, and Houston before moving to the Louisville, Kentucky area.
Oh, okay. Well, South Carolina is a nice state. I was stationed in Charleston.
Okay. Yeah. I was in Moolestown. I was in Columbia, South Carolina. Biggest thing I took away from that as a child, I always found it strange growing up, and it took me years to put this together. Why is barbecue red? I thought barbecue was yellow. And I grew up with Maurice's Barbecue, Piggy Park Barbecue in South Carolina. It's still my favorite. I order the sauce off their website. Anytime I go through South Carolina, I have to have it. That's probably the biggest thing I took away from living in South Carolina was that, to me, there's nothing like South Carolina barbecue. But I may be in the minority, but again, I always felt it was weird for years. It was like, why is barbecue always red? Why isn't there yellow barbecue too?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think the barbecue in the Carolinas is a lot of vinegar, but at least the sauces.
Yeah, North Carolina is the heavy vinegar base, and then South Carolina is the mustard base.
Okay.
It's kind of a combination of mustard and molasses and vinegar and different things. I've made a homemade version of it here that my kids and I really enjoy as well. So my wife likes her barbecue red and normal.
It seems like in the Carolinas they concentrate on ribs, pig ribs, pork ribs,
mm-hmm.
and then in Texas. They concentrate on brisket.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Texas is definitely brisket.
Yes.
So the pulled pork in Carolina is good too. But yeah, those ribs with that mustard sauce is good stuff.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, John,
I've gotten into the off subject, but I've gotten into the Alabama White as well, which is a mayonnaise-based sauce with a lot of pepper in it, and that's not too bad either. So, but anyways, I'm sorry.
I haven't heard of this mayonnaise-based sauce, Alabama, huh? Well, something. Okay.
It's worth a try. It's worth a try. All these weird things we're doing down here in the Southeast. So.
I'll have to look that up online. Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, John, do you think if Vicky could time travel and change 1982 or 1983 to 2019 or 2020, how well or how much more easier do you believe her wrestling career would have been, keeping in mind that she would still probably keep away from Vince McMahon Jr.?
I'll tell you, the main difference between then and now is if you're a woman wrestling at that time, you were controlled by Moolah. And that's the biggest factor. And there's a lot of debate about, you know, her legacy and everything like that and everything. My feeling and my opinion is, you know, is Moolah held women's wrestling back. And she held it back. She held everybody else back except for herself because it was all about her legacy. I can give you a whole psych profile on what I think the issue was with the Fabulous Moolah, and I think it goes back to her, you know, the issues she had with Billy Wolf and Mildred Burke, and she was always chasing and pursuing, you know, trying to justify herself to them. And, you know, the sad thing to me is she broke away from Billy Wolf, you know, who controlled all the women, who took most of their money, who kept them under his thumb, who charged them exorbitant rents in his buildings and stuff, and, you know, really never let any of them get financially ahead, pitted them against each other. She broke away from that. She partnered up with Jack Pfeffer. She partnered up with Vince McMahon Sr., and she took control of women's wrestling, and she did everything Billy Wolf did and worse. You know, and to me, that's that, you know, she really held a lot of people back. She stunted a lot of people's careers. You know, if you look at what happened to Wendi Richter, you know, I mean, that was 100% pure ego on Moolah's part, not wanting somebody else to take the spotlight ahead of her, which is not healthy for women's wrestling. And I think that's it really, you know, put women's wrestling back, you know, significantly. And I think if Princess Victoria or Leilani Kai or Velvet McIntyre or Wendi Richter were, you know, if you were to time travel and bring them into, you know, 2021, it would be a completely different picture, you know. And if they couldn't find a home, you know, I don't think that they'd want to work for the WWE, you know. I mean, the place to be if you're a woman in wrestling, you know, up until most recently, it's either going to be with Stardom in Japan or it's going to be with Impact Wrestling, you know. And with what AEW put on 2 weeks ago with Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, they may be turning the corner as well. I think it would be fantastic, you know, it's a shame we can't put a time machine together, go back and grab one of those tag teams and bring them forward. But, you know, certainly this is, you know, probably the best time to be a woman in wrestling that there's been since, you know, the 1940s when Mildred Burke was main eventing, you know, 2 out of 3 falls shows every night with Mae Young or Elvira Snodgrass or any number of other ladies back then.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Thunder Rosa. We had her on our show. I think she could fit very well with Vicky, even if Thunder Rosa could time travel. That'd be a great matchup.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think Thunder Rosa could fit into just about any time period. You'll be, she's somebody you could drop her back in the 1940s and put her in the ring with Elvira or Mae Young or Mildred Burke, and they'd go to war. I think that'd be a great matchup. I'd love to see that.
Well, John, as I mentioned, we had Vicky on the show before, but I could not recall the nature of the neck injury that put her out of the wrestling business. Wasn't it a ruptured disc?
It was a fluke accident in the middle of a tag team match. I want to say it was Despina Montagas. Had her up and just lost her grip, dropped Vicky to the mat, and then accidentally sat on her head. It was not an intentional move. It was not a move of experience, you know, that Despy was as experienced and as skilled as anybody else Vicky was ever in the ring with. it was just one of those unfortunate things that happens sometimes, you know. And you know, Vicky certainly has no animosity about it or no regrets about it. She'll tell you, it's like, I don't regret a thing, because if I hadn't left wrestling when I did, then the other good things that have come along in my life wouldn't have come along for me. But that's what it was. And it was, there's a match, a tag team match between the four ladies that took place a couple days before that injury that's on YouTube. That's not the match when she was injured. This was a dark match a couple days after that. But it was just her getting dropped and then Despy stumbling and accidentally sitting on her head while they were in the ring. And Vicky says she didn't have any pain at the time. She had no idea her neck was broken or that she was even injured until she got back in the locker room and bent over to try to untie her boots, and all of a sudden pain just shot through her entire body.
Okay. All right. Yeah, neck injuries are very common in wrestling. Almost every wrestler worth their salt, sooner or later, injures her neck.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, John, speaking of time travel, and if Vicky could do this, how well do you think she could have worked with a hurricane? The hurricane.
The hurricane.
Mr. Helms.
Oh, Hurricane Helms. Oh,
yeah.
I think she would have got along right with him. I've actually got a great Hurricane Helms story. I was at the StarCast a couple years ago, and he approached me because I was there with Dr. D. David Schultz, and he was like, "Do you think you could get David to do a video with me?" And he wanted to do his Gregory Helms Ace Reporter bit, trying to ask a question of Dr. D. David Schultz and have David scare him off. And David was not at all about it. And I worked David until I badgered and badgered and badgered him and finally got him to do it. And it's I think I've got it up on my YouTube channel as well as Instagram. But you know, Hurricane was just absolutely the biggest Dr. D fan, and just so thrilled to meet him, as were a lot of guys that were at that particular show. And getting to film that little skit with him and with Dr. D was kind of a thrill for me.
Oh, I'll have to look that up. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's just a great little 30-second bit. He's like, "I'm the Ace Reporter, and I'm here to ask the tough questions." He walks over and runs into Dr. D. He's like, "You got a question for me?" Says, "No, sir, I don't."
Could you send that video to Sign Guy? Is there a possibility?
I can do that. I can certainly do that.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Well, John, in that book, did Vicky talk – I know you and Sign Guy spoke about Pawcade earlier. Did Vicky mention Wendy Richter raising greyhounds?
No, we did not discuss that. We do have a lot of great Wendy stories. We talk about their trip around the world and getting to work in Japan, getting to work in Santo Domingo, getting to work in Mexico, and some really great road stories with Wendy. But no, we didn't get into the Greyhounds.
Okay, did she mention or tell you about the unusual way that she and Sherry Martel used to cool their sixth pack of beers? Did she mention this?
I've heard her tell the story, but I don't recall off the top of my head, no.
Well, when she first went out to the East Coast and started staying with Sherry Martel, they just used to tie some rope around their six packs of beer and drop it in the lake.
That's right, because they had to hide them from Moolah, because there was no drinking allowed on the compound. So.
Yes. Oh, I thought that was great. I saw that in the YouTube video that she put out. It was entitled "Maintaining Kayfabe in Professional Wrestling: The Dark Side, mm-hmm. The Dark Side of the Ring." She mentioned that. Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, in that video, she talked about a seminal moment early in her career in the Northwest, where Buddy Rose grabbed her by the collar and ran her into a wall, and she kind of split her head open. And Vicky's brother stood over her, and he got into a boxing stand, and he threatened Buddy Rose. Do you recall this incident?
Yes, yeah, that's actually the same night as that Battle Royal, and that was, she was the last one eliminated, and Buddy came out, threw her into the wall and split her open, and her little brother, you know, perfect boxing stance, she likes to brag, because she taught him how to do it, and, you know, they got back to the locker room, and Buddy was like, what in the world was that all about? I said, that was my little brother. And Buddy just said respect and understood. So, and she had to explain to her brother after that. She's like, look, when I'm in that ring, when I'm doing that, that's my job. You cannot come out there no matter what happens to me. But, no, she was real proud of him for that. And she still, you know, she credits Buddy with that. That was the incident that really put her over it and made Princess Victoria into who she was.
Now, about how old was her brother at the time? Do you remember?
He was maybe about, I want to say 12. I don't remember for sure.
Okay. Now, did this event take place in Coos Bay or Eugene?
That I don't recall that off the top of my head either.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, have you, in your wrestling career, your journalist career, did you have a chance to meet Buddy Rose before he passed?
I did not. No, I have not had a chance to meet Buddy Rose.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. That's all right. At any time, did Victoria mention a tag team called the Kangaroos, Lord Jonathan Boyd and Serge Charles? And if she did she mention them ever threatening her with a boomerang?
No, we don't. She did not tell that story either, unfortunately. So.
Oh, I don't know if she ran into him. She was around in that time where the Kangaroos were still active in the Northwest, and the Kangaroos had a reputation of coming up to the Crow's Nest to do the promos and shaking their boomerang at people and threatening to hit them with a boomerang.
I gotcha. She does have a great story about Piper's promo that he gave up there one time where. The night they thought that Don Owen was going to fire him because he was feuding with Buddy Rose at the time, and he said, I've got enough room in my navel for Buddy Rose's brain, a cockroach egg, and the heart of a promoter. And they all thought Don Owen is going to fire him on the spot as soon as he gets back here. And Piper came back in the locker room. Everybody was dead silent, and Don Owen came bursting into the room. I want to tell you something, boy. That's the best damn promo I ever heard. And they all breathe a sigh of relief.
Oh, wow. Hey, that's a good yarn, yes. Holy smokes.
She's got a great Piper story. She's got a great one. I won't spoil it, but she's got a great one about how he talked her out of having any kind of a trouble after she had caused a car accident on the way to the hotel one night. It's just an absolute classic Piper story. It's one worth reading the book for.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, in this video that I saw her give, she said that one of the highest compliments that she received in her early career was hearing the title, She's One of the Boys. Now, as you know, another status symbol that wrestlers almost always have to have is the cauliflower ear. Did she mention anything about getting cauliflower ears in her years of wrestling?
We didn't talk about cauliflower ears. She's very proud though that she and the other ladies she worked with were considered, you know, one of the boys, and they treated her equally. They treated her with respect. You know, it's funny. You know, over the last year we had the whole speaking out movement with pro wrestling, and where a lot of people were talking about the sexual harassment that goes on in the locker rooms with the guys and the ladies and some of the incidents that have happened. But, you know, she said it just wasn't like that at all back in her day. She's like, yeah, you had your rotten apples, but, you know, we were brothers and sisters and we were family. We looked out for each other. She said if she went into a territory and she knew Piper or Morocco or the Head Shrinkers or Terry Allen was in that territory, you know, that they were going to look after them. They were going to take care of them, make sure that they got where they needed to go, make sure that they, you know, got food if they needed it, knew where the hotel was, and, you know, they looked out for each other. And, you know, I mean, yeah, they didn't, you know, have intergender matches at that time. Sometimes they would have, you know, mixed tag team matches. And She actually got a nasty bump from Buddy Landell one night in one of those. But, you know, they were respected, you know, as one of the boys, and they were treated as equals because, you know, they worked hard, they perfected their craft, you know, they didn't complain, and they went with the flow, and they knew how the business was run. You know, they were, you know, she has nothing but fond memories of the guys that she worked with, and, you know, and the respect that they gave her back then, and treating her as one of them was something that meant a whole lot to her.
Yes. Yes. And, I really got a kick out of, how she had met Hulk Hogan early in her career and got along with him fairly well. But then she went to Madison Square Garden one night, and she hadn't seen Hulk Hogan in about 3 years. And she was near the ring, and I think she was actually getting ready for a match. And Hulk Hogan came walking by, and she goes, "Hey, Terry." And he kind of briefly looked up at her and just continued to walk on, as he said, with his nose in the air. And if you know Vicky, she speaks her mind, and he got about 10 yards away, and she called out, "Hey, I see you got your nose in the Hollywood scene, and Hollywood has gotten some stuck-up magnets." And Roddy Piper was sitting there and overheard this, and Roddy Piper burst out laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did tell that story in the book about, you know, and she said for the most part, most guys didn't change. There were a few guys like Hogan who were the exception to the rule, who kind of changed and, you know, let the thing go to their head. But, you know, for the most part, you know, just, you know, most of the guys, you know, were just great to be around. And she's got great stories about Jimmy Valiant and Jesse Ventura and, you know, a lot of other guys that she worked with up in New York.
Well, now, right after just only about two or three short years after Vicky retired from the ring, the seminal sitcom Married with Children came on the air, and King Kong Bundy made a few appearances on that show. Well, what do you think Vicky would have done on Married with Children, especially with Al Bundy?
She would have thought Al a little respect. Yeah, I don't know that she would have put up with it with Al. It certainly would have been fun to see her twist somebody like that in knots, you know. That's the kind of thing the Glow Girls were doing back in the 80s. I was watching Night Court the other night, and Matilda the Hunt was a guest star. Not as Matilda the Hunt, but just as a lady in a bar, you know. It would have been interesting, you know, to see Vicky, you know, to see her and some of those other ladies get, you know, they weren't getting those shots at that time, you know, and if they did, Moolah would have got most of their pay. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, when they made the cartoon with Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, it was Moolah, and I think Wendy was a character on it as well, but that was about it.
Okay, so you're saying that Vicky would probably not end up on the couch with Peggy eating bonbons. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, and Al would have been serving them on his hands and knees, probably. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I think Al would try to hold his no man meetings, and Vicky would have burst in and probably wrestled all the men and threw them around. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No,
I can see that.
Okay. All right. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sand Guy. It was nice talking with you.
Yeah. Great talking with you as well.
Back to you, Sand Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, John, I'm sure one of the things that fans are looking forward to right now, especially up here in our area since they haven't had it in over a year, is live wrestling. We talked a little bit about it earlier, but do you see in the near future kind of you getting out and going to live events and selling the books either with the people you've worked with on an individual book or just as yourself trying to sell books to fans when they're watching live wrestling?
I've got plans. I got my first shot. I have my second shot WrestleMania weekend. In June, I want to say June 10th and 11th, there are three shows going on in Charleston, West Virginia. Friday night is a men's tournament. Aaron Williams is on the show, Gary J and Jay Crist. I'd pay to see any one of those three guys, let alone all three of them on the same show. The next day in the afternoon is a girl fight show, and then that evening is a deathmatch tournament. Pondo is in the tournament. Schlack is in the tournament. Akira. I don't remember the other guys off the top of my head, but Pondo put it together. I mean, it's eight of the absolute best, hottest guys in the deathmatch scene right now. So, but I'll be there that weekend selling books at those particular shows. And then in July, I'll be headed to Waterloo, Iowa for the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame weekend, and I'll be selling books out there as well. And really, I was planning to go last year, and it got canceled, and really, really looking forward to getting back out there this year.
Well, I'm glad you have some things on the itinerary. We are getting close to the end of our show, though, and I want to make sure you have ample time to plug and promote anything you want. So go right ahead. If there's anything you want to say to the listeners, plug it all. Social media, a website, merchandise, any upcoming projects, or is all yours?
Thank you. You can find my wrestling website at eatsleepwrestle.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find Eat Sleep Wrestle on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at John Cosper. That's JohnCosper. I'm on Instagram at John Cosper Author. You can find my books on Amazon. You can find my wrestling books. Most of my wrestling books are available for sale on eatsleepwrestle.com. If you want an autographed copy, that's the place to get them. I've got Chris Candido's book in stock with signatures from myself and Johnny Candido. I'll have Vicky's books actually arriving tomorrow. They'll come with her signature as well as mine. Man Pondo's books autographed. Tracy Smothers, I had him sign quite a few stickers back when we first put the book together, and I've still got some. So autographed copies of his book are still available. Hurricane J.J. McGuire, who was Jimmy Hart's music writing partner, he is the music behind the Wrestling Boot Band, behind the Thunder in Paradise closing theme song, behind Hulk Hogan's American Made theme, as well as Sexy Boy and Cocky Cool Bad, and over 100 wrestling themes. He put together his autobiography with me a couple years ago. That's available on the website as well. I do have two books about pro wrestling in Louisville called Bluegrass Brawlers and Louisville's Greatest Show. I've done historical biographies about the Black Panther Jim Mitchell, Elvira Snodgrass, and Lord Leslie Carlton. So a lot of things on the website if you want to check that out. If you want to see my fiction stuff, it's at johncosper.com. As far as projects coming down the road, well, like I said, Madman Pondo and I are working on book number two for him, and I've just started working with Karen McDaniel on a book about her deceased husband, Wahoo McDaniel, which is going to be a ton of fun to work with. And also working on a historical bio about another lady from the 1950s named Mars Bennett, who started off as a circus performer and then became a pro wrestler. And actually, right before I went, it was late getting on the air with you guys tonight because I just got some letters and photos of her from the Jack Pfeffer collection at Notre Dame Museum, and just cool stuff. I love what I do, and I love digging up these stories, and not only telling the stories of more recent people, but going back to the past and these stories of wrestlers that people haven't even heard of, and making sure their stories come to light is just a ton of fun. So anyways, eatsleepwrestle.com is my wrestling website. You can start there, find all my social media links there. And as soon as we get off here, I'll send you guys a link to that video with the Hurricane and Dr. D.
That sounds like a very solid plan. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. And I definitely want to wish you and all the people that you are writing about success with the books. Princess Victoria, I'm sure, will have a very successful book. We're all looking forward to reading that. Very proud of her getting the book out there. And I definitely look forward to getting a copy myself to read it. Fans, definitely go check out Eat, Sleep, Wrestle and look up how you can get these books. They're fantastic books. I think you're going to enjoy John's writing. So make sure you pick up some of the books. Support not only him, but support some of the wrestlers that he's writing about. Great historical accounts in some of these books, too. If you're not familiar with the one on the Louisville area, that was a great read. So definitely pick up his work, check him out. We will be back with you on Sunday afternoon. This coming Sunday afternoon, we will be joined by Reggie Lincoln out of Texas. And then 1 week from today, we have Anarchy Inc., a tag team out of the Oklahoma area, to join us. So make sure you have plans to be with us. Everybody stay safe out there. Get out and support your local wrestling. We have some near you, and we'll talk to you soon.